Welcome back to a Clubfoot Mom podcast. I am your host and fellow Clubfoot Mom, Maureen Hoff. On today's episode, I have the opportunity to speak with Jacob Codner. He is a Clubfoot dad, and he's going to talk to us about his experience with the Clubfoot diagnosis and treatment, and how that treatment journey has impacted their experience as new parents, and how it impacted their overall relationship. I am so grateful for Jacob joining us today, and you'll get to hear him really open up about what that journey has been like for him as a new dad. And I always love to hear from dads. While this may be called a Clubfoot Mom podcast, I am fully aware that there are a lot of Clubfoot dads out there too. And I really appreciate Jacob coming on today to talk to him, talk to us about his experience. So let's jump in. Hi, Jacob. Thanks for being here today. I'm excited to talk with you and to hear about your experience with your Clubfoot cutie.
And I appreciate you having me. It's really cool to be on the podcast because it seems like yesterday I heard your podcast, yet it's been almost 2 years now. So it's very cool to originally hear your podcast, hear of you, and here we are now speaking. It's a full circle thing. It's pretty neat. So thank you for having me.
It's wild. I do feel like when you were in the beginning parts of Clubfoot treatment, you're like, people will tell you like time will fly, and you're like, no, it won't. It's like creeping by as slow as possible. And now even being on the other end of her actually being out of Boots and Bar, I'm like, wow, it really did go by a lot faster than I ever anticipated. So when you're like, it's been 2 years, it's crazy to think that that time goes by so quickly, especially when in the beginning you feel like it's going to be an eternity.
I couldn't have said it better myself. It, you know, time has gone extremely fast. And I remember in the moment just thinking, gosh, we're about to embark on this journey with no end, I shouldn't say end destination, but end timestamp in sight. And now looking back, it seems, I don't want to say like a blur, because there's still a lot of memories throughout that we'll always have and remember, but it does go quicker than you really do anticipate, especially starting this, you know, this climbing of a mountain as we originally looked at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to that end, why don't we just start at your beginning? Like, tell us the first experience you had when you like first, when did you first hear the word Clubfoot, and what was your initial reaction to it?
So my wife and I found out at her 20-week anatomy scan, and, you know, we are, our son, this is our first, and you know, when we had the 20-week scan, we didn't initially hear. It was when we went into the doctor's office after the exam technician was not the one that told us. So we sat down, you know, here we are 20 weeks, anatomy scan, that's awesome, let's go. And then when she mentioned that your son was born with a clubfoot, you know, obviously you hear your baby has something that not only are you not familiar with what it is, but something nonetheless. And it was a huge rock that just fell on us at the time, and we didn't know what it was. We didn't know what treatment looked like. We didn't know how treatment would, how we would find someone to help with treatment. And, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of my wife and I, we were almost numb to it at first. It took a little bit of time to just digest. And then once we digested it, the true severity in the moment of what we might be having to deal with hit us. And, you know, it was almost, I don't want to say, you know, crippling to us, but it was extremely emotional. And it was a very scary thing. And again, I think not knowing what Clubfoot was aided in that. But, you know, it was our 20-week scan. And I just remember, you know, walking out, sitting in the car, and us just confiding in one another, like, hey, we're going to figure out what this is, and, you know, we'll just make it happen. We'll do what we can. But it was definitely a heavy, very scary experience.
Yeah. I think that that seems to be a pretty normal experience for so many families, when they hear about that diagnosis, is there's almost like this sense of shock state where you are trying to process something that you don't have any experience with and that you know is going to be a life-changing event for you, especially if you're a first-time parent and you're going through just that change of becoming a parent and then having to throw a different diagnosis on top of it. There is that kind of sense of just initial feeling like, I don't know what to do next. Mm-hmm. So did they give you, like when you were in that appointment, what did they tell you? Did they give you any sort of idea or where to go or information about what treatment was going to look like?
So the doctor was extremely sweet during that time by saying, look, you know, she's I think 30-year tendered or something like that. And, you know, reiterated and did it multiple times that clubfoot is a treatable diagnosis. You know, it's a very treatable thing contingent on finding the right doctor. And our doctor was probably about a year or two into living, to relocating to South Florida. So the doctor referral was something that was lacking when she did break the news to us. However, she did make a point to say many times that the methods of treatment have evolved so much in the past, you know, several decades. But again, in that moment of hearing this, I mean, she could have literally said, go to the next office and there's a clubfoot specialist. And I would have been, what'd you just say? You know, mm-hmm. You're taken back. The doctor information was not there. But again, the comfort of knowing that the professional that just told us about the diagnosis was there to help us feel comfortable knowing, okay, let's just reset and we'll figure out what we need to do. But yeah.
How did you then go about researching it on your own? Did you go to websites? Like, how did you start trying to look for a doctor that was experienced?
So we went home that night. We went home shortly thereafter, but that night we went into almost, I like to call, a manic state of research. And we went down this hole of bad, I don't want to say bad, but not warm and fuzzy information, seeing that light at the end of the tunnel. And we've heard of, you know, it's kind of like in life, you always hear the bad things, you know, same mm-hmm. things in business. If you're a founder, you don't always hear about the good things. It's more of the bad things. And that was the part that I think was extremely scary, is the more we researched this, the more we went down this dark path of seeing things that were not good. However, in a big however, we did find a few people in this group that kept talking about specific doctors, one of which that was here in South Florida. So the information was great that we were able to have. I'm sorry. It was great that we were able to have so much information at our hands on the internet with Facebook mm-hmm. groups and websites, but it was really hard for us initially to decipher what will be beneficial information versus what will take us from that path of finding proper treatment, because we're getting blindsided by the worst case scenario. And again, we were putting the cart before the horse, thinking the bad before even embracing the good. And that was what I really found difficult in having all that information at your fingertips, mm-hmm. is just having the discipline to sort out, this is the path we want to go, while also gaining, you know, feedback and information.
Yeah, I think that's what I caution so many parents about, because I've very similar experience, and I think a lot of people do too, is that the Facebook groups are so great for some information, but especially when you're just learning about the diagnosis, the amount of information and trying to determine what your possible outcome could be and how that information would pertain to your child and your child's treatment, I think was really it's really challenging. It's a challenge to figure out, like, what of this is actually something I should be concerned about and could be applicable to me versus what is something that someone else is needing help with. And, you know, a lot of that, I tell a lot of people, like, people are going to that group because they need help, right? You're not hearing all of the stories of people who everything has gone smoothly. And that's one of the challenges, I think, when you're first learning about clubfoot and you're trying to do your own research. And it's one of the things that I've brought up to a lot of doctors is, like, they have concerns about the information on the Facebook groups, but I'm like, but the problem is you guys aren't supplementing that with information that is helpful for parents that you think is medically relevant. So there's no other avenues for them to find information. So if we want to, you know, have that balance, we have to have other resources available for parents.
Agreed. And, you know, I referenced a manic state of research. And at the time when we were looking through all the Facebook groups and websites, you know, I came across, obviously, you, your podcast, and a few other Instagram pages that were showing pictures of their clubfoot cuties playing soccer or, you know, other clubfoot groups talking about athletes that were born with clubfeet that you would never realize. So there is inspiration along that way of research, but it is hard when you're in such an emotional state of mind, as a family, as a household, to look at that glimmer of hope, because naturally I believe humans sometimes always think the worst is ahead, you know. And but, you know, fortunate enough, that, you know, one of the Facebook groups brought me to our doctor, and I'm extremely thankful for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was challenging to find my way there. And again, like you mentioned earlier, not knowing what does treatment look like, how is my case going to compare or differ from the most common to the most severe? So again, there is a mind over matter element when it comes to seeking treatment and learning about the best path while getting research that's beneficial and not detrimental.
Right. Yeah. So how has your son's treatment gone so far?
It's been good. It honestly has been good. You know, we did do the Ponseti method. We did the weekly castings. Our son was actually born a month early, and out of state when my wife was the maid of honor for her best friend's wedding, believe it or not, two hours. So he beats to his own drum and has since he was in the belly, is what I always say. Mm-hmm. But about 3 hours prior to the rehearsal dinner on a Friday, my wife's water broke. So we started treatment about 3 weeks after, only because our doctor had required a certain weight limit for treatment. Start, which I believe was about 7.5 pounds. But again, each doctor is different. That's just what our doctor did. But treatment, you know, we did the weekly casting followed by the tenotomy, and then that shifted over to the boots and bar, which tapered down, and now he's currently in naps and nighttime. So the treatment itself, knock on wood, and we didn't have any snags. There was no issues, and it was what I would consider a classic treatment associated with Ponseti.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, luckily, you know, it's been going as good as it can. And looking back, and I see pictures of him, he's unilateral, so it's one foot. And I look back and see pictures, you know, with the cast. And now I sometimes find myself when he's running around the house, I almost forget at times which foot was what. I mean, it's honestly crazy, and I wish I can go back and tell my wife and myself this, you know, almost 2 years ago, hey, you'll literally be 2 years from now looking back saying, like, wow, it like, you know, it goes back to our opening comments about how time just moves.
Yeah, and I think that's when things have gone smoothly with treatment, I think that's also a very common experience for parents too, is to feel like, I wish I could have gone back and told myself that this was going to be okay and it was going to be, you know, easier than I anticipated. I'm definitely a worst case scenario kind of person. So I prefer to live on the world of this is everything's going to go wrong. And then when it goes right, I'm like pleasantly surprised, right? I'm this is awesome. As opposed to the other way around, which has its own challenges. But as far as her clubfoot treatment went, it definitely was beneficial to me to kind of always keep a realistic mindset of what are the things that could possibly happen and then be feeling very grateful when they didn't, right? Like Agreed. We never encountered a lot of the things that I had seen on the Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. And because I had seen that it happened to other parents, I was like very grateful for that, that it didn't happen to us in a way that I don't think I would have in if I didn't know those things existed, right?
Agreed. And you know, it goes back to knowing what treatment's going to look like too, because there are certain things that you can keep your eyes open that may be an indicator for relapse that, you know, we never mm-hmm. would have known. And there's some, you know, I've seen it in the groups, which I'm sure you have as well. People have followed treatment textbook, you know, all the way through A and Z, and it can happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it does pay, like you said, to just be aware that things can happen, and definitely take the wins when you have them and cherish those moments, because not to sound bad, but you never do know. But knock on wood, we've got a great treatment process, and you know, he's doing fantastic.
That's wonderful. I think it's interesting for me, obviously I have two older girls, so for us we had built in newborn experience, but for parents like yourselves who have they're first-time parents, you have a newborn, which is a whole deal in itself, and then you are also thrust at in that same exact time frame into clubfoot treatment while also trying to figure out how to balance this new parent life with your work life schedule. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about how that transition was for you and what you think the clubfoot treatment, like what role that played in that newborn experience for you and your wife?
So I think I'll speak, you know, on behalf of my household, because we were a first time parent. And I do think you can ask this question and everyone will probably have a different answer. Mm-hmm. But for us, you know, having a newborn, we truthfully didn't know any better. So, you know, I don't want to say it made things easier because it didn't, but, you know, we learned how to change diapers with a cast. We learned how to transport our son in a car seat with a cast. We knew how to be aware of things while having a cast and supporting him and holding his leg, you know, so it's not dangling. So, you know, I think there was a little element of new parenthood that helped us, I suppose, in that circumstance, because mm-hmm. we had nothing to compare it to.
Right.
But also on the other side of that, you know, someone that's experienced childbirth and a child, you know, at another time, and maybe have navigated those waters a little better. So, you know, it worked for us. But, you know, being a husband to obviously my wife who just had a child, your hormones are changing, you're, you know, getting accustomed into being a mother, mm-hmm. you know, dealing with her own time away from work while trying to maintain, you know, my work as well. It's difficult. And it does really take a lot of discipline on proper time management and knowing, you know, for one, what's important, which family is the most important thing. But knowing on when, hey, I'm at work, let me grind this out, let me do this. But also knowing, hey, my wife is obviously, that phone rings, that call will be answered, and I don't care what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, throwing the clubfoot in the middle of it. Luckily, I was able to have a little flexibility where, you know, and again, this won't be for every parent, but I was able to go to every casting appointment and be there throughout that process. And fortunate enough, our doctor was not too far from my office. Mm-hmm. So, you know, logistically that all worked out pretty well, but it definitely impacted because it was just an extra layer of something to do and something to handle. You know, did I want to run home and say it's bath time with my son? Of course, but you know, with a cast, you can't really just do that. Or, you know, did I want to, you know, do certain things? Yeah, it definitely limited a couple things. But again, when your child is born, you look into his or her eyes and a foot is an irrelevant thing in that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you want your kids to be healthy and completely succeed, which I've now learned that clubfoot is not a, it's not a sentencing. It's not a, not a huge thing where this is going to take from being a parent, a husband, a father, or a mother for that matter. It's just another extra facet in a laundry list of newfound responsibilities as a parent to do, you know? So, you know, it's everyone has their own path. Everyone has their own challenges and things that are easy during, you know, being having a newborn. And for us, you know, it was fine. It was okay.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear what you think your experience as a dad differed to your wife's experience as a mom. Because I know we had two other girls, so we kind of had been through that new phase and the different roles that we had had, but I definitely think the clubfoot treatment threw a whole different dynamic in. And I'm interested to hear what you think that impact had on your experience as a dad.
Well, I'll say as a dad and a husband, you know, you want to be the rock of the family, the backbone. So, you know, it's okay to share your emotions and be upset and do all that, which sometimes us fathers and husbands don't really do that because you want to be strong, especially knowing, you know, the path that you're going down is not the most ideal one in that chapter of life. But, you know, my experience, I would say, was different than my wife's, as, you know, we just had a child, and besides hormones changing and seeing our baby, but you know, again, there's a special bond between newborn and mother. Mm-hmm. Not saying there's not one between father, but you understand what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
So seeing her eyes looking at our son going through something that was not intentional and might be causing discomfort or pain was terrible. I mean, it was so hard, but these kids are resilient. And I remember early on reading and hearing time and time again that it truly is harder on the parents during treatment. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a huge truth to that statement. And, you know, I would say the difference between, you know, my experience and my wife's was not really letting myself be vulnerable and be upset because I didn't overly want to show my emotions because I wanted to be strong and positive and, you know, the rock, which again, it worked and we were great, but you know, it was very hard to see my wife. You know, there's one moment which I remember on our first casting, we left the office, we're in the car, she's in the back seat with my son and he's just crying. And I see her and she's just crying and I'm sitting there and I can almost bring myself to tears thinking about this. But in the moment, you know, I had to suck it up, say, we're going to be okay. This is going to be okay. We had, you know, we did our research. We knew that the first appointment was going to be the toughest, which I truly believe it is. Mm-hmm. And we'll get through this. And, you know, I remember, I think it was the next morning or a couple of mornings after that, I was at the gym at 4:30 or 5 in the morning and I just started crying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's every husband and wife and father, mother have their own way of handling things and every marriage is different. But I would say it did differ a little bit by, you know, her, just seeing her for her baby was so hard for me to watch. It really was. But she did amazing and she was strong. And I think it actually helped our marriage grow even better, knowing like here's a tough, tough thing that our child's going through and we're able to do this and we will do this. And our son is going to be awesome and we're going to get through this. And, you know, it had its moments, but we learned a lot from it and here we are.
Yeah. I think that's such an interesting component of being a dad just in general and seeing my husband. The newborn phase is so dependent. Your wife is going, you know, it's postpartum. So she's recovering from the labor and delivery. And then on top of that, she's in charge of all of the nursing and, you know, all of those things. And you can already feel like you don't have a lot of ability to help, right? Like, so you're kind of like, okay, where can I, you know, my husband's like, where can I get in where I fit in, right? So like, where can I find my realm? But in a similar experience, he, in a way, the clubfoot treatment actually allowed him to bond with her in a way that he didn't with the other two, because he was present during all of the appointments and he felt like there was something that he, because there was this extra component that not only just I was caring for, but that he was an active participant in. It's like it created this different bond that wasn't there for our typical children, because so much of that was on me. And so I think it was, it's just interesting to see that and how that dynamic plays within your relationship and you being a new dad and not necessarily having that built in of like, okay, this is where I kind of fit in. Like, and now this is how it's different with my clubfoot child.
Yeah, that's very well said. And there's definitely roles that fathers do have and don't have. And I think you're, like you just said, your husband being present and being part of that treatment, as was I, it's very important.
I think if you have the ability to do that, like, I do think it's a luxury, like, that not everybody gets, but if you have the ability to do it, I always encourage both parents to be present during those appointments, because it's not even just, like you said, a bonding with your child, but it's a bonding with your partner, the person that you are on this journey with and the only other person that has that lived experience with you. So if you have that ability to be there, and I also just based on what you said, I always like to encourage parents and dads in particular to be able to share the moments of vulnerability that they have with their partner, because I do think you take on that sort of like, I need to be the strong one. And sometimes in my experience, I was like, but I feel really alone and feeling like everything is very catastrophic, right? Like I was feeling all these emotions and I'm looking at you and you're like, it's going to be fine. And I'm like, no, like I'm freaking out. Like, can you just freak out with me a little bit so that I don't feel like I'm a crazy person? Because postpartum, you already feel crazy. and so then to have that experience too, is I'm like, if I could go back and tell, I think I would try to also just create some more space for him to be able to express those moments of concern and his doubt, because I think he felt so much pressure to not want to do that because I was feeling enough of that for the both of us. So,
And you know, like I said, too, every role between husband and wife is a little different. And I think, you know, that's the role that I played was, you know, that's what, you know, my marriage is with my wife, and there was definitely some moments of vulnerability, but, you know, as a dad, it's interesting to hear you say that, because I think that does hold weight on knowing, you know, if I could go back, I would share in that, you know, let's take this, because it is a very serious thing, let's take it very serious and not just totally look at the positivity, even though, you know, the positivity is what I feel was a recipe for clear thinking and clear treatment. So there's a fine line. There really is a fine line. And, you know, it's just, but like you mentioned too, the bonding element between parent, child, husband, wife, it really was an element of treatment that I didn't expect to embrace and be part of, you know, so.
And, it's an unexpected silver lining that I think you can't explain until you've been through it. And I think what I encourage people in these looking back now in their relationships is just to be able to have flexibility. And I say this, so, you know, I'm a therapist by nature. So it's this, you have your roles that you're playing and you play those roles. And a lot of the time, those are really important to getting you guys to where you need to be and the functionality of your dynamic of your relationship. Where I think we could have done a better job is allowing more flexibility for each of us to take a little piece of the other person's role from time to time and balance that out a little bit better. And I think, like, from your standpoint, I did all the research. Like, I'm very type A. So I, on top of feeling everything, I also did all the research to be like, I'm going to do, and I didn't really allow him to have a participation in that, which it sounds like you were really more involved in that, which I think is also a place where I encourage dads to do that too. It's like, don't just, you know, even if your wife's doing all the research, you can do some on your own too, so that you're not then putting that pressure on her to also give you the information on top of everything else that she's already kind of navigating.
Yeah. And being a parent, especially a newborn parent, it's tolling, you know, it can be tolling on a relationship. And luckily my wife and I have awesome communication. And when we did start the process of researching, I remember that vividly. We were both sitting on the couch, both, you know, teary-eyed. And again, it was that same evening after the 20-week. And we joined the groups together. And, you know, and if we found our way going down a rabbit hole, we would tell each other, hey, stop, or she would tell me to stop. So we kind of, I don't want to say set rules, but just we... You know, along the path, we would realize, hey, we got to tone this back a little bit. This is not helpful. You know, information's helpful, and it's good to be aware of, you know, of what can happen. But you literally go to some of these groups, and it's a breeding ground, unfortunately, for people to vent and talk and seek help for those severe cases. And like you said earlier on, you don't really hear those great outcomes or see the picture of the child running on the beach in these groups. Every now and then you will, and it's like a glimmer of hope, but there really needs to be more of that. There needs to be more speaking of, hey, we were where all of you are, and this is where we are, and just do know this is the target and you can get there. This is what worked for us, and you know, this is maybe this didn't work for us, and it's, you know, there's just so much information there out there that you have to just be aware of.
Yeah, I always tell people it's just creating boundaries for yourself around how much content, information you consume in the groups. And I think, like you said, in the initial part, you can really go down a rabbit hole. And then you get to a point where you're like, okay, I kind of got my like gauge on what
my bearings,
the purpose of this is, right? And then you're like, okay, so when am I going to go into these things? And I think the communication piece is so, it's so key. And I think that if you have the ability to keep the communication open, like there were times where I was like, I am in a bad spot. Like my mental, you know, when you're pregnant and you feel a different responsibility level because you're growing that human inside of you. And so regardless of whether the doctor tells you it's not your fault, you still feel like there's something that you're doing and it's out of your control, but literally it's growing in you. So like, how are you not in control? It's such an interesting experience. So there were times where during that initial part of the diagnosis, right after we found out, I was like, I'm in a bad spot. And they're like, okay, so let's talk through this. Let's like, but if you don't have that ability to communicate with your partner, like, listen, this is, I'm going down the rabbit hole. And then they're mm-hmm. like, okay, that's a signal that we need to talk about. Let's pull back. Right.
Yeah.
So it really is, it's a whole different level of, it requires a whole different level of communication with your partner that you maybe didn't think that you would ever need or have. And I think that goes for parenting in general, but then especially if something is happening that with your child that's different and is going to be pushing you into more of a medical caregiver role.
Agreed. You know, when you're going through a treatment, no matter what it is, you know, you have to have the level of communication because they're, you have to support each other and also be there for each other. And as we spoke about earlier, that silver lining or unexpected maturity associated with a marriage that I found too, because we grew a lot during this period together. It is an interesting thing that I didn't even think about, nor I would assume my wife did. Once we had this diagnosis, we didn't, you know, you don't think about us. It's all about the child, which is still the main importance of treatment. But, you know, we did learn a lot about communication, which even outside of treatment is a very important thing with a newborn. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember we had this thing, I'm kind of a night owl and she's up early. So I'd say, I will take the shift and I will see it 2 a.m, go get some rest. Yeah. And yeah. I would check out and then I'd be up at, you know, 7 o'clock to go to work or whatever it was the first few weeks. And we, I always found it cool too, in the moment, like you mentioned, postpartum and, you know, a husband can be frustrated and if something's not going his way, whatever it may be, we instilled, hey, whatever we say to each other in the heat of an argument in the middle of the night, come first thing in the morning, that did not happen.
Yeah.
It didn't exist. It's all good. Let's just drop it. And it's something that we did. So it does go to communication, you know, among your spouse and, you know, whatever works for you, works for you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we had a very similar, and honestly, not just with our Clubfoot cutie, but with all three of them. We were like, sure, the fights that happen at midnight, the arguments.
They're real.
They are real. And they are also really not real. Like, they are so sleep deprivation driven that you're like,
very true.
Yeah, those are almost like what happens in Vegas stays there. It's like what happened at night in the middle of the night. We were like, we're just going to leave it there. Like, there's nothing of substance that we are really going to need to litigate outside of that 2 a.m. hour. And I think having that conversation up front or just that, you know, kind of pact is really important, especially that, you know, Clubfoot can just add that extra layer of sleep issues because your child is learning to sleep in a brace. And that is, you know,
just comforting and
Yeah. And so being able to have those like, okay, we know we're going to have some sleep deprived conversations here. So what are we going to do with that? So I think that that's such a good, it's such a good tidbit for other parents listening here, like to normalize that experience, because sometimes you feel like you're going crazy. Like no one is experiencing this.
And
the reality is, we're all experiencing it. We're just not all like talking about it openly with everybody else because it seems so silly in the moment. You're like, why? I don't even know what we're fighting about. Like,
And it's also like, I remember when we were expecting, people would always say, just wait, you just wait. And it kind of always drove me nuts. Like, just stop telling me, I know. Just wait. But then I remember being in the moment, I'm like, wow, that couldn't have been any more true. It's like, wow, here we are. I feel like a zombie. This is like torture, but it's also amazing because looking back, it's like, wow, you know, it's, it goes back to how we started this podcast. It goes in the blink of an eye and it's a cool thing.
Yeah. So if you had any advice to give to another dad who might just be hearing about their child's Clubfoot diagnosis, what would you say?
I would say when you do start researching and educating yourself, take some of that severe information with a little bit of a grain of salt, because, you know, you really do focus, I think it's human nature, on bad. Is my child going to be that that low percentage of the underlying issue and, you know, having bad treatment and having it becoming the snowball effect of other issues. It's a low probability, I think. And again, you're on these chats, you're on these groups, you're on these Facebook, you know, outlets, which inevitably anyone that finds out about a clubfoot treatment goes there. It's just such easy information to have. So my advice would really be, don't obsess about that bad. You know, try to find good information, take that and really put that in the front seat. You know, like I mentioned you, I when I messaged you about, you know, just pretty much thanking you, you know, several weeks ago, I scrolled up and saw our conversation going back a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And when I first texted you a few paragraphs, I'm like in a manic state, but I was also like, how was your experience? Tell me about it. How'd your treatment look like? What's going on? Oh, is that what happened? Well, what happens if this happens? Yeah. And it's like, all right, dude, chill out. Just calm down. All right. But in that moment, it's so hard not to get there, mm-hmm. but just try not to, you know, it doesn't do any good obsessing about something that you don't even know if it pertains to you. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's the advice I would give, you know, any other dad, any other parent for that matter. Just do your homework, yeah. be as calculated as you can, try to find a good doctor that is experienced in clubfoot treatment, and just, you're just like the pregnancy, you are along for the ride, you know, yeah. no matter how you try to control the situation, the narrative, you can't. The only thing you can control is by being educated, mm-hmm. Doing the most amount of research you can, making the best decision you can for treatment, and just be there for your child, be there for your spouse, and that's it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I like to end every podcast with guests about them telling kind of a special moment that sticks out. It doesn't have to be anything in particular, but just a moment that stands out for you during any portion of kind of your clubfoot journey with your child.
I have two moments that immediately jump out. One was the in between casting and boots and bar, which mm-hmm. our son went to 23-hour wear for the first, I think, couple months, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And I remember giving him his first bath with my wife. He was so tiny. We put him in the sink and wrapped him up, and you see his little leg, and you know, it's first day of boots and bar. And that could not have been any more of a treat to us and to him. It was just like, oh my God, this is awesome. The casting's behind us. Now we have the next chapter, but seeing our little boy in the sink and just wrapped up and so cute and giving him a bath, which you're not, you know, it's hard to when you have the cast, you have to do sponge baths. And it was such a, we're going to do this. We are going to get through this. Our boy is going to be awesome. And honey, you were awesome during that. We're going to make this happen. That was a very, very strong, memorable moment. I think we actually both cried. I know we did both cry during that time. And that was such a heavy moment, and I'll never forget that. And then the other moment that stands out, it was pretty much right around the time he started walking. We brought him to the beach, and he was in the sand. And I remember just taking a picture of him walking on the sand. I sent it to our doctor. I put it in the WhatsApp, or not the WhatsApp, I'm sorry, the Facebook groups. And anyone that I maybe have spoken to during treatment, I sent that picture to. And again, I was like, we're okay. And he's okay. Right. Most importantly, he's okay. Those two moments are probably the two largest moments, not only of treatment, but in my son's childhood that I could think of.
No.
I mean, yeah, it was just sheer blissfulness and, you know, hopeful, like, this kid is going to take the world. And our kids, you know, all clubfoot cuties, they are so resilient and they are so strong. And as parents, I think it's important for us to remember they're much stronger than we think. And, you know, we just have to take the ride and be there. And in that moment, both that bath and walking on the beach, I said, Wow. It was a true moment of reflection.
Yeah. I think those are both beautiful, and I think they're very indicative of the things that you find so joyful on this journey that you maybe wouldn't have if you weren't on this journey, right? If your child didn't have clubfoot, would that walking and that step on the beach have as much meaning as it did, right?
Or a bath. I mean,
or a symbol as a bath, right?
Simple as a bath. And I think during treatment, whoever listens to this, they should know it's those little moments that really make a big, big picture, make the world. You know, that's the glimmering of hope and keeps you going. Kind of like I remember early on when my wife was pregnant, I was talking to a guy at the gym. He's like, oh, man, first few months are rough, man. And then, you know, it's just diapers and this and that. And eventually when you get that little smile, you're like, wow, this is amazing. And, you know, it's same things along treatment. There's like these little cues that keep you inflated. And it's important to be in the moment and be there to see those.
Yeah. And really celebrate those. I think you're absolutely right. Those small wins that maybe don't mean as much to other parents, but really mean a lot to you. It's so important to really pinpoint those and to celebrate that, because it has such a large impact on your experience and your child's life.
Yep, 100%. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest, Jacob, and for coming and sharing your experience. I always appreciate, even though this is the podcast is called A Clubfoot Mom, the dad's perspective. It's never my intention to leave the dads out of the conversation. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience. It's so important, and I know that it's going to be really helpful for other dads out there listening to just to be able to connect with that piece on your experience as a father. So thank you so much for reaching out and making the time to make this happen.
No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me. And like I said, it's been a few years or a couple years rather. I've followed your Instagram and your podcast. So keep up the good work. And I truly do thank you for allowing me to be part of the podcast, and hopefully can benefit someone who listens in.
Yeah, definitely will. Thanks, Jacob.
Anytime. You take care.
I want to give a huge thank you to Jacob for joining us and sharing his experience on today's episode. If you know of another clubfoot dad who has recently been diagnosed or in the midst of treatment who just wants to hear from a fellow dad about their experience, please share this episode with them. And I really appreciate everybody listening today. If you need to get in contact with me, you can do so through my website at maureenhoff.com or my Instagram account at Clubfoot Chronicles Mom. Until next time.